at Southlands, and what you, what brought you there. The reason I guess you remember, I told you I interviewed a student from the days that you were teaching there. I was so impressed.
Who was that?
Derek Andrew.
Oh, Derek.
Did you know Derek?
Well, yes. I remember him very well. Actually, I have some photos that.
Oh, really?
Derek is probably in there.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
Well, he. Because we went, I took Derek to camp over on Anvil Island.
Oh.
Yeah, we had a great time. He was a marvelously enthusiastic student.
Yes.
A great deal of background knowledge in all kinds of areas. Very interested in learning. He was a great student.
Oh, yes. Well, his final, we don't know what he's going to do exactly, but he said something about environmental law at one time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad he's going into law, because he certainly had the mind for that.
Oh, well, that's good. He's sort of politically motivated, too. He's
yes.
Just,
yeah. He was.
He was at the time, too.
Yes,
he's
he
that
was.
Young age.
He stood out quite dramatically in that class as a grade 4 or 5 student. You know, he had a twin brother.
Oh, he did?
Yes, his brother died when he was in grade 3. His father and his brother died. His twin died all within about the same year.
Oh, my goodness.
It's shocking.
What
I don't
a
know
shock.
How that mother withstood it. I have no idea.
She's remarried now.
Yes. Very nice woman. Very good.
I don't know her at all. Wow. Tell me what you did. You were teaching.
Well, I started at Southland School in 1985 in September. And actually, I missed the first 6 weeks of school because I went off for some surgery. But I loved Southland School. The location of the school is ideal. You know, this huge forest to the back door. So we did a lot of running in the forest. We did science studies in the forest. We went for walks and did a bit of creative writing in the forest. So there couldn't be a better location.
Yeah.
I started out my first year there with a grade 4 class, and these students were really, really delightful. One of the things that I found really satisfying at Southland School was the degree to which the parents contributed positively to their children's learning situation. And so it was very satisfying to have enthusiastic kids who were interested in the cross-country team and interested in the gymnastics club and interested in running, interested in just being out and about. Mm. So I'm not sure exactly how to start other than to say that the children at the school did become very engaged in the larger community. My students 1 year made presentations to the provincial hearings on the future of the endowment lands, and each child in that class stood before this august body out at UBC. Actually, it was at the Justice Institute, and they stood up and they read a presentation they'd written themselves as to why the endowment lands should not be developed. And these students subsequent to that invited the mayor at that time, Gordon Campbell, to the school to debate with him as to why there should not be development, housing, what the endowment lands meant to them. And so about a year and a half later, when it was determined through this federal provincial process that the endowment lands would be saved as a park, the students, whom I no longer had in my classroom, were invited by the premier, at that time it was Bill Van Der Zand, to come to the ceremony dedicating this land for public park. It's a GVRD park. But of course I couldn't round up the students. They were all with different teachers, and I had other students.
So
we didn't go. But I did pass on to those students a letter commending them for their efforts to stand up, and I encouraged them, since they had been successful in their first attempt to affect public policy, that maybe they should see this as a model and continue to dedicate themselves to making their own world the way they want it to be. So that was very satisfying. Besides involving ourselves in the efforts to preserve the endowment lands as a park, the students were involved in a lot of environmental issues in my class. We tried tried to get the children at home to recycle, and I was very fortunate to have a lot of parents who were prepared to help me in this endeavor and to start up a bit of recycling at the school. And that was a very satisfying process. We did have people into the classroom from the federal government, actually, to speak about the treatment of the welfare of animals in the production of meat. And so the kids became quite engaged in that issue for a while. That was one class. We went every year to Victoria, to the provincial legislature. Every spring we went and visited briefly the legislature, but mainly went to the provincial museum and then picnicked in Beacon Hill Park. And it was really delightful because those students were very engaged in what they were doing. They had a lot of curiosity. They had a lot of energy. So as a teacher, it was really delightful to have the support of the parents for this kind of activity. Yes. And the children so willingly engaged, you know, the outside world. I ran for political office at one point when I was at the school, and many of those students got involved. I ran for the Green Party, actually.
Okay.
And so all of these kids and their parents.
Oh, my goodness.
Their parents
Isn't that wonderful?
Spent hundreds of hours delivering, you know,
leaflets
and, you know, trying to, you know, make people aware of how what we're doing today will affect their children's future. So that was very satisfying. But we also did other activities that weren't so politically motivated, I guess. We went down to Granville Island and, you know, went to performances and just basically, I think pretty well every month we went out to some type of outing that was related to their education.
Yeah.
It wasn't just fun and games.
Right.
Well, fun and games are interesting as well. So, you know, to work in a community where there was so much support for education and from the parents and so much enthusiasm on the part of the students was extremely satisfying. The atmosphere at the school was very, very upbeat. As I mentioned, I sponsored cross-country running teams and track and field teams. Also this gymnastics club, which really did engage a lot of the students from January to March. But we had teams, you know, other teams and games at noon hours every day in the gym. And the children so willingly embraced everything. They have lots of energy at that age. And so it for me was a very satisfying experience to work in such a community. It was amazing, actually. Many of those students, I just delighted the thought of them. I really do.
Like family.
Yes, I've followed several of my students who are now, you know, doing PhDs and who are out there really trying to make a difference in the world. And that, too, is satisfying from an educational point of view. I retired, just this past year, as I said, and of course I had left Southlands in 1990, so many of these people hadn't seen for a long time, but parents from the community also came to my retirement to support me, which was very satisfying.
Oh,
and another very interesting part of teaching at Southlands School, of course, was the fact that about 25 to 30% of the school was made up of children from the Musqueam Reserve. That was certainly an education to me, for me, and I really, really, truly enjoyed becoming involved in the Musqueam culture to the degree that I was able to. Wendy Grant was the chief at the time, and I did teach her children, and I found Wendy to be so supportive, and I took my children down to the Elder Center down on the reserve, and the community had been quite the non-native community had been quite shut off from the Musqueam Reserve for a very long time, and the principal who was at Southlands at the time also was interested in sort of opening up or trying to engage the two communities, and so we had a lot of activities that you know reached beyond the non-native community, and we began to do programs in the classroom that mm-hmm. are related to Musqueam culture. I still think there is so much more to be done. Mm-hmm. I think there's still a tremendous gulf there. Mm-hmm. And I often, now that I'm retired, I go past the school grounds at recess and lunchtime. And I have to say I'm a bit saddened to see that, you know, you tend to see the Musqueam children playing along with the Musqueam children.
Yeah.
And non-Musqueam children playing amongst themselves. Mm-hmm. But at times I felt there was some opening up, there was some sharing of culture on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I really valued what the Musqueam children were willing to bring of their culture into the classroom. Because for so long I think they felt shut out or inadequate or outside
mm-hmm.
Of the mainstream Southlands culture. And many of the children there became involved in the sporting activities
mm-hmm.
that we did. And I have to say Wendy Grant's son, Wade, was a very academically gifted child.
Really?
Yes,
yeah.
He was. And I know he's gone on to University of Northern BC
okay.
where he was studying for his undergraduate degree. I haven't spoken with him in many years,
mm-hmm.
but he was truly very, very gifted. My son was at UBC at the time,
mm-hmm.
taking studies in the poetry of William Blake, and I know he came into the my son came into the classroom to do this program one day on poetry. I did a lot of poetry with the children at Southlands, and they really embraced it. But I remember one day Wade Grant coming up with an analysis of a poem that was so far beyond what even I could have come up with. And I remember my son saying that he would take this back to his class discussion group at the university because he felt Wade's analysis so profoundly,
mm-hmm.
you know, insightful. Anyway, there was, you know, Wade just didn't bring to the classroom traditions of the Musqueam culture, but his own analysis of the culture that's around us, period.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, all of the children, I think, brought a lot to what we did there, not just the Musqueam children. I had some amazingly gifted students.
Mm-hmm.
A girl who was in Derek Andrews' class, she was the top graduating student in her faculty when she graduated from UBC. And she came from a family that was very, very supportive of education. I think the father came with us on our week of camping
Ooh.
To Anvil Island.
Okay.
So that kind of support really
mm-hmm.
made things happen,
yeah,
you
is.
Know.
Yes, it's wonderful. Tell me more about the camp at Anvil Island.
Well, it was a church camp that we were able to get the use of because one of the teachers on our staff, our librarian at the time, Elizabeth Smith, was a member of the church,
mm-hmm.
as was the parent of this particular student I mentioned, Christina Cockle.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to get it for a week. And I was very sad to say all of the science projects that I had planned for that week on the seashore, dealing with shells and
mm-hmm.
The animal life of the seashore and in the intertidal zones, there's
nothing
living.
There.
Nothing living. This is a result of our pulp and paper industry
really?
Up in the Squamish area. Yes, the waters are totally devoid of any life forms. That was amazing. But we did forest studies
mm-hmm.
and trees, and of course I'm a very active birder.
Oh,
and so my students
wonderful.
always have to do a considerable unit of study on birds.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of forestry work
mm-hmm.
and other science studies we could do, but I remember it being such a shock that year. But we did hiking, and the children took turns in, you know, having their day of work in the kitchen
mm.
over the course of the week. But it was a wonderful, we had beautiful weather,
oh.
and there were deer out every night. It was
oh,
actually
wonderful.
Rather difficult
oh.
to get the children to go to bed at night,
yes.
because there was a grove of apple trees in the
uh-oh.
Center of the camp, and the deer would come out at night to
oh,
eat these
yes.
apples. Well, these children.
We're
surrounded by dozens of deer. It was a wonderful experience. And,
that is grand. Uh-huh, super. You know, my parents had a property in California, and my children would go there, you know, for holidays,
yes.
and the deer just went through it every day, you know,
mm-hmm,
and they just
yes,
loved it. It's especially yeah. nice at Christmas time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. absolutely.
Magic.
Yeah.
So, tell me a little bit about yourself. When you came to Canada and...
I was born in Canada.
You were? Oh,
yes,
you were born
yeah.
in Canada.
Not all people of
no,
color
no,
are
no,
born
that's
somewhere
true.
Else.
I thought, I heard otherwise about
yeah,
you, but that
yeah.
was...
No, no, I was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Oh, really?
Yes, yeah. I moved to British Columbia in 1951, actually.
Oh.
Our family lived in Winnipeg, and the Red River flooded its
oh.
over... Well, inundated the city of Winnipeg in the worst flood in Canadian history to that
okay.
point in 1950.
Oh.
So my father was a railway porter.
Oh.
And so we moved to North Vancouver in 1951 and graduated from high school there, went to UBC for my teaching training. And I was married in 64 and had a lovely young son who's now 30 years of age.
Right.
The joy of my life.
Yes.
And I was very involved in athletics as
mm-hmm.
a younger person. I ran in the Olympics and Commonwealth Games,
oh
my American
goodness.
Games,
oh.
and I still do a lot of officiating for track and field.
Goodness.
I worked at the Olympics and World Championships, Commonwealth Games as an official out in the field, and I get a lot of pleasure from that.
Oh.
I now I'm doing volunteer work for the Go Ballet as
oh,
well as well as for track and field in BC. But my main struggle in retirement is to get busy and rewrite a manuscript that I wrote about 10 years ago. I would very much like to publish this family history,
oh, yes.
which starts with my grandfather's life. My grandfather ran for Canada in the 1912 Olympics.
Oh, really?
Yes.
My goodness.
And my brother, Harry, ran in three Olympics. You know, there's a statue of my brother on Stanley Park Seawall.
Yes, I knew that.
As a matter of fact, students in my class mm-hmm. in 1988 actually unveiled that statue.
Really?
The ceremony was, my children had gone to the foundry
okay.
to watch the pouring of
oh,
the, of the, you know, first
uh-huh.
part of that metal sculpture.
Uh-huh.
And they certainly learned a lot about the casting of bronze
oh, yes,
in that
that's
year.
Wonderful. That was in Alexander Street, I guess.
Yes,
that?
That's
yeah.
right, down at Jack Horman's
yeah.
studio. And then we... children actually went to that, and some of them actually went to and participated in the business of trying to retain the foundry. You know, it was closed down by the city
That's
because
right.
they wanted to bring the Three Sisters housing development there.
Right.
And all of my students had done illustrations of the foundry
oh, yeah.
as a follow-up to their visit there.
Oh, yeah.
And so they presented those at City Hall, and then some of the students actually went to the evening presentation and
yes.
Retain the foundry. But anyway, when the day that it was the statue was unveiled on the seawall, these students all held the fabric
oh,
cloth
yes.
that covered the statue and then was pulled off. So that was a very satisfying day.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, will always be associated with the statue of my brother.
Yes.
So that was another way in which the students you know, sort of really participated in the larger life of the city.
That's right.
Beyond
it's
the
so
doors
important.
of the classroom.
You've done such wonderful things for the students. Where did you go after Southlands?
I went to Laurier Elementary over at... well, actually, I took a year out when I left Southlands.
Mm-hmm.
I had gone through a series of crises. My husband left. My father died.
Uh-huh.
My older brother died. And then my younger brother died. He was
oh.
killed. He was run over by... my brother's death,
Ooh.
Both of them were sudden deaths, and that
Ooh.
Was very shocking to me. So I think by the time that fourth catastrophe beset me, I was really terribly run down and exhausted. So I took a year out, and then I went to Laurier School, which, like Southlands, is filled with children who are in love with learning and
okay.
a very supportive parent community,
mm-hmm.
but a very different population in many ways. About 90% of the students at that time were recent immigrants.
Oh, interesting.
People who were leaving Hong Kong, knowing that Hong Kong was going to revert to mainland
oh.
China in 1997. So there was a huge immigration at that school, and so the teaching was a very much different style, very
mm-hmm.
ESL,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the students at Southlands who already came to school with such
right.
rich language, you
mm-hmm.
know, from these very well-educated, well, the parents at Laurier were well-educated,
yes.
they were just well-educated in a
another
different language,
language.
Yes. So it, Laurier was a really, really satisfying experience. I enjoyed enjoyed teaching the students. They were so committed. And again, the students engaged, you know, the outside community. Mm-hmm. We involved ourselves in trying to save the Oakhurst Hospital lands from development. They were across the street from the school.
Oh, yeah.
And the children had cataloged the 78 trees on the property and studied them all and were hoping to save them. And I think any of them were saved. But anyway. So, yes, I was very happy to be able to finish up my career and another very satisfying teaching experience.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. So, what got you interested in nature and all that sort of thing?
Well, my son. Well, I had been a birder and interested in birds for a long time, and of course, birds need trees. Mm-hmm. But my son, when he was 16, he became involved in the Green Party. He fought a great battle against McDonald's to get rid of styrofoam, and he led that campaign across Canada, and ultimately was successful in getting McDonald's to renounce their commitment to CFC produced styrofoam. So, you know, mothers support what their children will do, and he wasn't old enough to run in elections, although he certainly ran the campaigns, and I was the puppet candidate, so to speak. So that's how I became involved. And of course, you know, what we're engaged in outside of school, we inevitably end up bringing, you know, with us to the classroom. It's who we are that very much defines the way we teach.
Yeah, right.
So that was the thrust there.
That's very interesting. Yeah. So you went through UBC for the teaching bit, and how was the job situation when you graduated? Was it pretty?
Well, I didn't start teaching with a degree. You know, when I first started teaching, you could teach after only 2 years of university. And so I actually started at age 20. It was just after my 20th birthday. I got married and started teaching in 1964.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I picked up my third, fourth, and fifth years along the way whilst I was a teacher, actually, going to summer school and night school and intercession. So I really didn't graduate, or I didn't get my fifth year, I guess, until 1985, something like that. It was just sort of strung out along the way because the government actually upped its requirements. I mean, I was already going back before they upped the requirements for teachers to teach elementary. But, my father had always envisioned that I would be a teacher or a nurse. And I used to think when I was younger that I would become a nurse, but I soon found out I couldn't stand the sight of blood. And I'm very queasy, even at the best or worst of times in a crisis. If there's any blood or gore, I'm the first one to flee. Or cover it up with a blanket. And call for higher authority.
Right.
But, so I went into teaching, and I truly loved the profession, and although I was often encouraged to consider, you know, going into administration, it never had the least appeal to me at all. Because for me, the real interest of education was working with children, and I think we have a much better chance of directing children in their attitudes and their knowledge than we ever have of shaping the opinions and attitudes of teaching. And as you can see, I'm a person of color, and our country is not exactly racism-free. And my own experience through school, well, even my own first day of school in North Vancouver, you know, our family was stoned off the school grounds.
No.
We didn't go back for 3 days. No principal, no teacher walked across the street from the school to our home to bring us back.
Yeah.
So I don't have huge expectations always of adults, but children, you know, you've got a chance to show them that everybody is really the same. You've got an opportunity to expose them to different cultures, different values, and see that there are so many commonalities amongst peoples that, you know, the differences are only surface. So, and as a teacher, I found actually in my first year of teaching actually was a nightmare. My principal was a horribly racist man. He used the word nigger almost every day that I was there.
Oh, dear.
Oh, he was a dreadful soul. So I didn't see administrators as necessarily being a model of anything. It was super wonderful. And the best we can do is to work with the young, you know. Mm-hmm. They are relatively free of bias.
That's
and if we can keep them positive in their attitudes toward each other, then that's the best that we can
that's
do.
Right.
Because
I
have so much more respect and hope for
yes,
children, I
yes.
think. So
oh,
that that always kept me in the classroom. I couldn't have imagined, and also as an administrator, you tend to deal more with problems than you do with the
oh,
positive
right,
aspects
the real
of education. So.
That's wonderful.
I'm looking at your artwork, which is interesting, and you arranged it so well. So where did you get your art?
Oh,
I've
been a lover of art my whole life. It's just odds and
mm-hmm.
ends that are collected here, there, and everywhere. I took a year out of teaching, as I said, in between my Southlands year and my Laurier year, and I was fortunate enough to spend almost every day of 4 months in Europe, almost every day of it in a gallery somewhere,
okay.
from Basel, Switzerland, to Florence, and up into Stockholm, and I enjoy art. It's
right.
nice to see the beauty that there is in life, not just that which is in nature, but
right.
The beauty that people create through
yes.
art, and as I mentioned, poetry is one of my passions, and
that's
my students always had to take
great.
A lot of poetry,
that's
and
great.
They seem to have loved it.
Mm-hmm. They have to be exposed about. My husband's a poetry lover too, but I got turned off because I never was able to analyze it properly.
Well, properly, you mean just somebody else's prescribed.
According to the
prescribed.
Teacher,
yeah,
yes.
That's
oh,
too
yeah.
bad because
yeah.
there's so much more to poetry than
oh,
giving
yes.
the right analysis. There's just
mm-hmm.
so much joy in the rhythm of it,
that's
the beauty
right.
of how it's written, and everybody takes something for themselves. You know?
That's right.
Analysis is a good thing to learn, but it doesn't necessarily
doesn't.
Have to be right or wrong.
No, you can just enjoy it
yes,
for
yes.
what it is, like music.
That's right,
abstract.
Absolutely, and we all
mm-hmm.
love music for different
mm-hmm.
reasons. We
mm-hmm.
all bring our own.
Tell me about the Go Ballet, because as I recall, it started at the Dunbar Community Center, is that right?
No, I'm not sure. I don't
they didn't have that there? I thought they...
I could be wrong. The Go Ballet was started by Mr. and Mrs. Go.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Go is was a man from Singapore who had gone to Beijing to study under a great French... ballet master, and of course then the Cultural Revolution came along and the ballet master from France wasn't able to necessarily impart what he wanted to. It was a matter then of, you know, producing things to honor Mao and the Cultural Revolution. And so the Goes immigrated to Canada, and they lived, I know, near Laurier School.
Oh.
That was 25 years ago. Their daughter, you know, is now the prima ballerina of the National Ballet. But they've had the office at the school at 8th and Main for at least 15 or maybe even 20 years, I'm not sure.
I think, I just thought maybe they started off at the, having classes at the Dunbar Community Center. I remember seeing things up on the reader board quite frequently.
I read the biography that Chan is autobiography that Chan Go was just produced.
Okay. Oh, good. And it wasn't in there?
Dunbar Community Center wasn't mentioned.
Okay,
I know that she lived
fine.
Near Oakland and 57th.
Yeah, it would have been
and,
a bit far.
If any community center might have been Marple
yes,
Oakridge.
Right. Yeah.
But I know they've been at 8th and Main for a very, very long time.
Oh, that's nice.
But my involvement there is an absolute delight. I'm on a board that is one of the most... I've been to hundreds of meetings in my life, if you can imagine, from the political realm to all kind of the educational realm. And this board is delightful. Our chairperson is Faye Wong, whom I've known for a lifetime. We used to work in the kitchen at Lionsgate Hospital when we were in high school.
Oh.
And her husband, Milton, used to drive me to track meets for many years when I was young. He and my coach, John Minichello, started the track club that I used to belong to, the Optimus Striders. Harry and I ran for them. And so it was wonderful to be asked by Faye to be on this board, because it's a wonderful group of people who are so committed to ballet, and it's just a very gentle, positive experience.
That's
wonderful.
So have you done it yourself?
No, I couldn't dance if my life depended upon it.
You can run.
But I could run, yes.
Oh,
it's just wonderful to be able to contribute to that.
Oh, yes. I'd forgotten how Harry had died.
He died in a seizure. He had developed seizures a year before he died in 1981. And he went into a seizure when he was in a car, and he aspirated his stomach contents and died instantly. And it was certainly not an affliction that would have killed him, but this blood vessel was leaking and causing these seizures, and of course they couldn't really analyze it adequately until after, you know, when they did an autopsy. And so this damaged artery is ultimately, you know,
terrible,
precipitated that. Yes, it was very sad. It was an absolute shock to me. He was my closest relative, he and my dad, and my younger brother were very, very close to me. And Harry's death, it was almost a crippling event.
Oh, yes, I can imagine.
So, back to...
But
he made a big impact on my life, and one of his qualities was that he was extraordinarily tough and went ahead regardless of any negative things that came his way, and which there were many. And so he's given me strength by the model that he always provided.
That's
grand,
Oh, that's wonderful. So it sounds like you're very busy with your...
Well, I'm certainly enjoying my retirement.